All right, I told somebody a couple days ago that I would speak on the grass is greener on the other side of the fence today. We did this about 2 years ago at one of the youth meetings, and we were just having a discussion, and I had just been looking over my notes a couple of days before, and so I remembered doing this, and I think this is a great subject. I think this is the reason, I'll be honest, I think this is the biggest reason why some Christians never succeed at anything in life. Because they're always chasing something on the other side of the fence instead of sticking to what God gave them to do. And in life, when we're discussing, let me think how to say this right, when we are discussing spiritual things, the way to heaven is clear. We know that, right? You can't get there through Buddha, can you? Okay? There's only one way to heaven. But when we start living the Christian life and doing the things that Jesus teaches, if we apply a different set of principles to how we choose to live that life than we would apply if we were doing something in the earthly realm on earth, we will not be successful in our Christian life. All right? The principles are the same. If you go to school all your life and you cheat on every test and you don't actually do the work, you will not learn. Right? Okay, so let's go to Christianity. And let's say we cheat in Christianity. We pretend to be something that we aren't, and we never learn to walk with God. Will you succeed there? No, because that principle works the same either way. And if you meet a person on earth who is always changing everything they do because something else is always better than where they are, that person's never going to succeed in life. You can find the exact same thing in Christianity. Let me give you an example. Now, you can look up to somebody, and we'll just throw out Bill Gates, for example. He's a bad guy, okay? You don't want to be like him. But you can look up to him as a person who made money in life, okay? And we know his name as a wealthy man. And we say, what would I do if I wanted to pursue that kind of a lifestyle? What do I need to do to get there? Now, the fact of the matter is the bulk of humanity doesn't have the opportunity to get there. That place is reserved for a few, perhaps intelligent people, perhaps lucky people. Probably more often somebody gets there because they were in the right place at the right time than the fact that they were more intelligent than somebody that grew up next door to them who never got there. But regardless, when we're going to talk about earthly success right now, we're not going to compare to the ultimate that most people are never going to attain anyway. So let's just bring down the level to something that's reasonable. Let's say that you want to be the best that you can be in your own life. We're talking earthly now, not spiritual. Well, we'll apply this to spiritual. You want to be the best you can be in your own life, and you want to get a good job, you want to make good money. We're talking earthly now, not this isn't necessarily our goal as Christians. But let's say that you want to pursue the best career that you can pursue in life. I will say it absolutely plainly this morning. You are 1,000 times better off with no education, no college degree, starting at McDonald's when you are 14 and staying there your entire life than you are by always chasing something that is going to give you a better opportunity. The person who starts at McDonald's at 14, drops out of high school, doesn't go to college, and stays with McDonald's their entire life will go way farther than the person who is always changing a job to try to find a better position. Because that person can become possibly the next CEO of McDonald's. They have that opportunity if they really put themselves into their work. But absolutely for certain, they have the ability to become, in by the time they're 21 years old, the manager of their local branch. And beyond that, with another 40-some years of work ahead of them, they can continue to grow in the company and do more and become more. And I'm not saying McDonald's is a job you should all pursue. I don't. You know, if you guys don't like the idea of working at McDonald's, you don't have to work at McDonald's. But the person who gets into something and sticks with that thing and becomes a part of that thing and stays in that thing and actually learns what they're doing and becomes the best they can do at what they are doing, that person is going to go 1,000 miles further in life than a person who is changing what they are pursuing every year. And as I said last time I spoke on this, you know, one of the most common reasons that we reject applications when they put in applications at Golden Harvest for hire, one of the most common things that we reject the application is they had too many jobs in the last 2 years. We're not interested in bringing somebody on to work that has no interest in staying on to work. Now, qualify everything I say this morning, okay? If you are 16 years old, you're going to high school, you're intending to go to college when you're 18, and you're looking for a job that's going to last you a year and a half or 2 years or something, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with getting a job at Golden Harvest, and then when the time comes that the plan for life was that you're moving on to somewhere else, you quit and you go on. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a stepping stone. It was an intentional stepping stone. I'm talking not about people who do something for a little while, intending to do something else later. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about people who get a job, not intending anything else in the future, but can't make it more than 6 months because they get burnt out with what they're doing. They don't like it. They can't get along with their coworkers. The work is too hard. The boss is giving them dirty jobs, all this kind of stuff. And for every reason under the sun, they don't last at anything they start to do because their commitment falls to pieces. Now, this is what we're talking about this morning. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. This is a saying that you've all heard many times in your life, and in one sense it is a true proverb. Though when we use the proverb, "the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence," we don't mean that it actually is. We mean to say that the person who is always looking at the other side of the fence is being dreamy about life, that they're actually wrong, that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. However, I'm gonna back off a little bit from that idea. I want to give you some absolute reality. It is true that there are hundreds and hundreds of times in life that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And the question is going to be, what is our response to that situation? Let me give you a couple. Standing up in front of an audience of people, a man and a woman get married, and they will admit on that day that they were the lucky one on earth to have gotten the best person on earth to marry. He's the absolute best. She's the absolute most beautiful. And they're together. And 10 years later, they're getting a divorce. Why are they getting a divorce? Well, they weren't lucky anymore. What changed? The person they married is still the same. You know what happened to that grass that they had in their own pasture? They didn't maintain it. They didn't take care of it. And so it withered and died. And now, let me ask you a question. Now, if you're that person, you got married 10 years ago, and you're not happy with your wife anymore, is it okay to take grass from the other side of the fence? Okay, no, it's not. So let me give you one that, this is a good one. I hope there's no kids listening. How many of you guys in this room have had a child and it didn't turn out to be a good one? What do you do when your child is a brat? Do you get a different one? You know what happens in high school? I never went to high school. Sorry. I think I've heard enough about this to know that this is true. You know what happens in high school when the kids are trying to figure life out? They change friends a lot. Today, you're my friend. Tomorrow, I'm mad at you. I'll have this one for a friend because she's going to treat me nice. But a week from now, she's not going to treat me nice, so I'm not friends with her anymore. Now I'm going to find a different friend. And back and forth we go, getting mad at people because of something they did one time that we didn't like, that we thought was against us. And so we create this unstable environment for ourselves in life that you can't succeed in life that way. If you're going to succeed in life, you have to take the problems that come to you and you have to work through them and they have to get fixed. All right? So today I have a good friend. Tomorrow my good friend hurts me. Tomorrow it's time to talk to my good friend and make things right with each other, make sure that we're on the same page, that we understand what's going on, because I'm going to have to keep this friend for a lifetime if I'm going to ever have any friends. Because if I can't handle this friend today, then I can't handle any friends. Because that's not a problem with my friend, that's a problem with me. I'm sorry to have to say that to you guys. Now I want to stop and think, because this proverb, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Who do you think we're talking about where'd that come from? That comes from the cow. The cow is in the field. The cow wants to be on the other side of the fence. It appears like it's better over there. You know, as a matter of fact, most of the time, if you drive around the farm fields of this state, most of the time that would actually be true. The grass is actually greener on the other side of the fence. Why is that true? Well, it's not the cow's fault now, because the cow wasn't created to be a farmer. The farmer's supposed to take care of the cow, and the farmer doesn't always do a very good job in treating their cows as the cows should be treated. But this is what the cow does, and we're going to apply this right now to human beings, because this is the same exact way that people treat life. You turn the cows out into the pasture, and it's absolutely lush, beautiful green grass. They're the happiest thing on the face of the earth. They have no idea that there is any way that field between those fence lines could become a field of nothing but dirt with no grass alive. They have no idea that could happen, but it can. It can happen with anything in life. And we've all driven by those fields and seen and can testify to the truth of that. That's exactly what is going to happen if we treat the field like the cow treats the field. So here's what the cow is going to do. The cow is going to go in there, and without any regard to the grass, as though it has no value at all, she's going to walk all over it. Okay? She doesn't give a hoot where she steps. All right? So she's going to walk all over the stuff that she wants to eat, but she's also going to eat. Now, if the only thing the cow did in that field was eat, the grass would last a lot longer than it does with the other things that the cow does. But in taking some of that food for herself, she also walks on the rest of it, she pees on the rest of it, she sleeps on the rest of it. And after a summertime of cows in a field that may have started with lush grass in the beginning, you just have dirt or mud. And now we're not going to blame the cow now. And now the cow can walk over to the fence and stick her tongue through that barbed wire and try to eat the grass that's on the other side of the fence. And she'll be doing that all day long, looking for something that she destroyed in her own field. But now, God didn't make us like he made cows. He didn't make cows to farm the land. He did make us to farm the land. And in the same way that we have to maintain property to be able to farm land, we also have to maintain life to be able to live life. It's the same exact principle. If you are going to take the things that God gives to you and use them when you need them and abuse them the rest of the time and do nothing to maintain their continued growth, you will be in a field of mud. Or let's say maybe you aren't in a field of mud. Maybe you're just in a field where the grass isn't as tall and as lush as the field that's next to you. And so here you go. You want to change your position. You want to change your position. Now, when it comes to getting a different job, this was actually in discussion the other night when we started talking about this. We're talking about getting a different job. When it comes to getting a different job, it doesn't matter. There's nothing morally wrong with quitting McDonald's to get a job at Burger King, okay? That's not sin. All right? There is something morally wrong with quitting your wife to get a different wife. We know that. So now we're going to make a difference in our own understanding. We're going to look at some things and say, these aren't wrong to do. And these are. But I fear that the person who does a lot of changing in the area of the places that are not wrong will also do changing in the area of the places that are wrong. Because you build a specific character in regards to life. Unfortunately, there is a certain amount of character as a human being that we need to have a proper attitude towards life and to do the proper things we're supposed to do. There's a certain amount of character we need to build to be able to make the right choices. And when you come up with something in life that isn't good right at the moment, right now, the first choice in your life should be to fix the situation you're in. Now, I'm not going to pretend to say this morning that you shouldn't ever make any changes. I think that's ridiculous. I think that there's times in life that change is the right thing to do. Change should be made prayerfully. It should be made with considering options, and it should be made very much in tune with a solid sense of the fact of what you have that you don't like versus what you're going to get. Because the fact of the matter is, the one thing that human beings can't ever change when they change positions, so they cannot change the fact that they go to the new position. Whether it's a marriage, or it's a work, or it's a relationship, or it's a church, or it's a shopping experience, or whatever it is in life, anything that you change from this to that, you go to the new place. And 90% of the time, when somebody is changing all the time, it's personally themselves that is the issue. That's not always true. It's not always going to be the fault of the person, but it is that way more than not. So we want to be careful when we get to a place where when we want to change, we want to be careful that we're not changing because we didn't have the ability to overcome that situation. Specifically, I'll give you one just thought to think on as far as working jobs go. Bosses are jerks. Okay, you guys ever had a boss that was a jerk? All right. Well, I like to think that those people who work at Golden Harvest don't have a boss that is a jerk. But I have a personal knowledge of the fact that some of my employees think that he is. All right. Let me tell you something. You want to leave Golden Harvest and go get a different job? Just talking to my own employees. Now, if you want to leave Golden Harvest and go get a different job, you can. But I can almost guarantee you that there isn't any bosses on earth that are better to their employees than the bosses at Golden Harvest. If you can't handle your boss at Golden Harvest, you can't handle a boss. That's the problem. I didn't say the bosses at Golden Harvest are perfect, but I happen to know a little bit about the way most bosses treat people, and it's not that great. In fact, swearing and screaming is quite common, unfortunately. But when the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, if we decide that our rule for life is going to be that every time there's a better opportunity on the other side of the fence, we're going to change it, we're going to be that person who has no ability to have any success in life because all we're going to be doing is changing. I'm going to suggest a different strategy for life this morning, where instead of always trying to change to a different pasture when the grass looks greener over there, let's develop a program to keep the grass green in our pasture. This is what we're going to do that's going to give us success in life. Let me give you what I would call the truth on this subject. The grass is always the greenest where it is watered and cared for. Okay? That's going to be the truth. You can get the loveliest situation on earth with the perfect job and the perfect wife and the perfect house and the perfect car, the loveliest situation on earth, and 10 years of lack of attention to caring for the situation that you have, it will be 100% destroyed. That's absolutely the truth. Nothing that is good on earth maintains itself. Everything that we know in life that is going to do us good and that is going to be worth having or being a part of is something that we have to maintain ourselves. So that's my preface. Now let's get some scripture. In Malachi chapter 3, we pull out this one verse that we all know about God, but it's a truth that we have to understand. Malachi chapter 3, verse 6 says, "For I am the Lord, I change not." The rest of the verse says, "Therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed." Malachi is speaking to a rebellious people that had turned against God in disobedience to God. They were everything that God told them not to be. And God has to come to them and look at them and says, "You know the reason that I haven't destroyed you guys yet is because I'm the Lord and I don't change." Because many years ago, God had made a promise to Abraham that he would build his seed and that it was through his seed that all the nations of the earth would be blessed, and that Jesus, who God had promised was coming through the seed of Abraham, hadn't come yet. It was still 400 years in the future when Malachi is writing this. The seed hadn't come yet, and so God said, You sons of Jacob haven't been consumed because I don't change. Because hundreds of years previous, God had made a promise, and he wasn't going to break his promise. And he worked with Israel, though Israel slapped him in the face. He worked with Israel for hundreds of years, sending them prophets so they could kill him, and teaching them so they could get mad, and giving them the law so they could disobey it. And all the while, he loved them and cared for them and disciplined them and tried to get them to turn back to him in spite of the fact that they rebelled and rebelled and rebelled and rebelled against him. He did this because he had made a promise and he wasn't going to change. This is the character of God. Now, we as Christians are supposed to be developing the character of God in ourselves. This is what we want to be like if we want to be like God. So now that we see the character of God in that verse, let's go to Proverbs chapter 24 and let's see a characteristic of man that we don't want to have. In Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 21, it says, "My son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change." very, very clear, meddle not with them that are given to change. Now, there's nothing anywhere in the scriptures that tells man that he should never change anything, all right? There's nothing in the scriptures that says, oh, you shouldn't get married because you're single right now. In fact, the opposite is said. If you found a wife, you found a good thing and you've obtained favor of the Lord. If you're single and you find a wife, get married. That's a change. Okay, but now remember something, because when God made them, He made them to be one man and one woman for life. That's how He made it to work. And so if you're going to enter into a relationship with a woman, then your plan should be that this is going to be a lifelong commitment. And now you say, well, I have the right as a person to make a change in my life if I'm single and I want to get married, right? Right. But let's use our head to make that change to get married, because once we make that change, we only get to do that one once. Now, I'm not speaking to people who, we all mess up our lives, and if somebody has messed up their lives and has not maintained God's principles, and that's the past right now. We're not talking. We can't change things that we did wrong in our past many times. But we're talking about God's will for how it's supposed to be. You're married, you get to make that choice once. And then for the rest of your life, you take care of the choice that you made. So if you are going to make a change in your life from being single to being married, that's a good choice. But we better make that change very, very carefully and with very good discernment, because it's not something that we get to change again in 6 years when we're tired of it. So the Bible says, meddle not with them that are given to change. It doesn't say don't ever change. It says meddle not with them who change a lot, who are changing all the time. Stay away from them. Now, I have a few more verses I want to look at of some changes that the Scripture speaks of that are just absolutely insane. Like Psalm 106 and verse 20. It says, they changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. They forgot God, their Savior, which had done great things in Egypt. He's talking here about a group of people. It was the entire nation of Israel, minus Moses, who was up on the mountain, and Joshua, I believe, was at the foot of the mountain. And here, Israel had just seen God perform many, many, many miracles in Egypt, many miracles since they left Egypt. They had seen the fire on the mountain when God gave them the law. They had seen the glory of God. And then they go and they build themselves a calf made out of gold that they could fashion with their own hands, that couldn't move, that couldn't hear, that couldn't talk, that couldn't see, and that could never, ever perform a miracle. And God has to write about these people and says they changed their glory. They changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. It wasn't not only just that it was an ox, it was just the similitude of an ox. It wasn't actually a living ox. It was just plain gold. It wasn't even alive. I mean, if you're going to worship an ox, at least get a live one. Why do human beings make changes like that in life? Because they're not using the basic God-given senses that God gave them to understand the difference between right and wrong. Now in Jeremiah chapter 2, God talks also to the children of Israel again about a change they made in their lives. We should read this whole chapter, but we won't. We'll just read a couple verses. In Jeremiah 2 and verse 13, it says, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and have hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." So you guys all need to drink, right? You need water to stay hydrated and to feel good and to stay healthy. And here you live at a house where there is a spring in your backyard and it's always bubbling every day of the year. You've been there for 10 years. Every day of the year, there's water bubbling out of that spring. And you say, "I'm tired of this house. I'm tired of this spring. I don't like this place anymore. I'm going to move." And you choose another house out here in the desert, out where there's no water. There's no spring there. And you say, "It's no problem if there's no spring there because I can haul my own water." And so you build a container to hold the water that you're going to haul to your house because there's no spring there. But they're broken and they don't hold water. And you drive every day, you drive back to the spring where at your old house, and you fill your cisterns with water and you take them home. But by the time you get home, they're empty. This is what Israel did. This is what Israel did to God. They forsook God and they went after gods that weren't gods. God, the only living God, the only one that could actually do anything for them, they forsook, and they went and they got themselves, they changed. They made a change in life. It was a very simple change. They got rid of God. They got a different God. They weren't happy. Because if you go to the end of the chapter, let's just read verse 35. "Yet thou sayest, because I am innocent, surely his anger shall turn from me. Behold, I will plead with thee, because thou sayest, I have not sinned. Why gaddest thou about so much to change thy way? Thou shalt also be ashamed of Egypt as thou wast ashamed of Assyria." So Israel, they forsake God, they go find themselves a new God, and then their nation's in deep trouble because of the change they made. And so because of the change they made from the true God to a false God, then they're constantly changing in their own right as a nation. First, it's Assyria that they need to protect them in the war. But Assyria doesn't work. So now they need Egypt. And God says, "Egypt isn't going to work either. The problem with you, Israel, isn't the fact that that Egypt is better than Assyria. The problem with Israel is the fact that they forsook God. And God was the one who had won the battles for them when they entered Canaan. God was the one who got them into the land and gave them what they got. And then they forsake God. Now, how are they going to ever find a replacement for God?" And this is what happens when people actually forsake the right way in life. The only thing that is left for them after you forsake the right way is change. You will be changing constantly everything that you do, because there isn't anything of value on that side of the fence. It doesn't hold up. Now, let me give you a few more scriptures that help shed some light on this. Maybe we go to Psalm 23 next. You guys know what's in Psalm 23? It's good stuff. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures." I wonder if the thing that was the most important to Israel was just to keep God, because when you have God, the pastures are green because God takes care of the pastures. Okay, that's a good starting point. But listen, there's something here that if you don't look closely, you might miss it. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. That's one. He leadeth me beside still waters. That's two. He restoreth my soul. That's three. He prepares a table for me. I'm dropping down to verse 5. He prepares a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. That's 4. Thou anointest my head with oil. 5. My cup runs over. 6. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. 7. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. 8. This psalm is filled with good things, but there is something that we skipped in between the good in the beginning and the good in the end that I want you to listen to here. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now I'm going to say as a renegade preacher that nobody will say in most churches today, you cannot have anything in this psalm if you step off the path of righteousness. The paths of righteousness are an absolute necessity to every other good thing that is promised in this psalm. Notice that of the 8 things, whatever it was that we just went through and looked at, these are different things that God gives to us. Lying down in green pastures, still waters, restored souls, a table in the presence of my enemies. How do we get from here to here to here to here to here to here to partake of all the different things that are offered to us in this psalm? In between all of those things, there is a path. And you have this path in life. Everything that you get in life. So you're going to get a good job. You're going to get a good wife. You're going to get a good house. You're going to go to a good church. You're going to have good friends. You're going to maintain good sense. All these good things that you're going to get in life, you're going to get these things by walking a path. One step after another leads you from one place to another place. You're always walking that path. And that path is a path of righteousness, of which any deviation from the path of righteousness will not lead you to the blessings that are promised in this psalm. You want your pastures to always be green. Well, then you have to stay on the path of righteousness, because the path of unrighteousness will lead you to pastures that are not green. Now, these are absolutes, and we all going to agree with this morning. We know that if we depart from the Word of God and do sin, that it will take us to bad place in life. Okay, we understand that. But in the same manner, I'm telling you this morning, that in the same manner that this path of righteousness leads us between all these good things that God has to offer in life, there is a path in basic things of life that needs to be followed to get from destination, from point A to point B, to C to D to E and back to A and back. And as we travel around life, there's a path that will lead us to the things that we need or the things that we want, the things that we're trying to get. There's a path that will take you there. And if you get off that path, you'll end up in the mud. Let me give you one of my favorite passages out of Proverbs. In chapter 11, we speak on this one all the time. I just love it. It's such a good picture. Help to explain some of what I am talking about right now. In Proverbs chapter 11, it says in verse 25, well, let's back up, verse 24. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. All right, this is what you could call this a farming story. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth. So now I want you to imagine that you're the cow now, that you're living between fences. There's a limited area that is your pasture land. That's how much land you have to grow grass on. You are going to have to properly maintain that pasture if you're going to have fresh grass all the time. You're going to have to properly maintain that pasture. So we're going to set aside this piece is for eating. This piece is for sleeping. The piece where we sleep, you know, if we sleep on dirt, it doesn't hurt our belly, okay? It's okay if we sleep on dirt. But if we sleep on the grass that's for eating, that's not going to be so good. And now we're going to need to install a toilet, cow. Instead of just going all over the field, let's install a toilet so you're not peeing all over your fresh grass. We're going to have to organize our field a little bit. And now, sometimes, grass is a bad example because it grows of itself. Comparing to this passage, the things that we would grow, we're going to have to plant. Now, we don't do that with grass because it just comes up. You eat it down to the ground and it's going to grow again. But let's say that we were growing something other than grass in this field. Part of the stuff that comes up that we would want to eat, we're going to have to not eat. We're going to have to actually put it back into the soil and plant with it. And we're going to grow it. And this idea is foreign to a lot of people, that you actually have to take a good thing that God gave you that would be good to consume, that would be good to eat or good to use. You actually have to take that thing and not use it. Throw it out into the field because you need it to grow your next crop. You know, there's a lot of people that think of life as, what can I do? What do I need to do to get by in life? How much money do I need to make? What kind of a this do I need? How much do I need to invest in this to get by? God never ever promotes that lazy kind of an idea of what can I get away with? How little can I do? What small amount of thing can I do to actually accomplish what I want to do? What God wants us to do is He always wants us on that side of extra. So let's say I need X amount of food to eat in a year. Well, then I'm going to grow twice that much because I'm going to need a bunch of that to put back into the ground so that I can grow it again for the next year. I can't just grow as much wheat as I need to eat right now, and then I'm going to spend the next year turning that wheat into bread. What am I going to plant next spring? I have to have something to plant. And Solomon is writing this, and he says, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth. Somebody here has gotten the sense that in farming, you don't want to spare when you are sowing, because if you spare when you are sowing, it's going to prevent you from reaping what you want to reap. And so when you're sowing, you want to give it everything that you can possibly give, because then your harvest is bigger next year. And then you can both plant more and eat more. That's what the American lifestyle is all about, eating more. That's what we like to do here in America. The more we can eat, the happier we are. But he goes on. It's not just a matter of farming here. He says the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He's not just talking about farming here. This is the underlying principle that he's basing his ideas off of. But we're going to climb the ladder because we weren't animals. We were created in God's image. We were created to give and to take care of and to be responsible for. And so it's not just the fact that we're supposed to be seeking something for ourselves. We're supposed to be finding out what we can do for somebody else. That's how we make our choices in life. What can I do for somebody else? And if your resources are limited, it makes a lot of sense in the human mind, if your resources are limited, to hold on to them. And God says, no. Give it away. Because when you do that, it comes back at you. You know, you're going to have the true God if you want that to work. Because if you're going to trade your God off for a cow that's made out of gold, the cow can't help you with that. The time is up. I want to go to one more scripture. In Titus chapter 3. I think I'll just read one verse here. Verse 8 says, "This is a faithful saying, and these things I will that thou affirm constantly, that they which have believed in God might be careful to maintain good works. These things are good and profitable unto men." I will that thou affirm constantly. Do you know, he doesn't just want us to maintain good works all the time. He wants us to affirm it constantly. You know, if we ever quit preaching this from the pulpit, then we're going to quit living it in daily life. And if we ever quit living it in daily life, then we are going to find ourselves unprofitable in our Christianity. I will that thou affirm constantly that they which have believed in God might be careful to maintain good works. They are not going to come by themselves. You are going to have to upkeep them. It's your responsibility. So you set off in life and you've got many, many choices as a person to make. You've got many different decisions to make. Let me give you my personal advice. Don't ever make a change from what you are to being something different or to doing something different or to going somewhere different or to changing a job until you have thought seriously, talked about it, it made good sense in the minds of everybody that heard you. Don't change just because a situation you were in was an irritating situation. That's building bad character. Now, I'm not trying to tell anybody don't ever make a change. I think there's lots of times that changes are good to be made. But we want to make a change that is based on sound judgment, because when we make that change, we want it to be the right change and we want to be able to stay with it. Meanwhile, any time that you're in a situation that is a poor situation, for example, it's not giving you what you need, and there's trouble in the situation, and you wish you could get out of it, let's first try to fix the situation according to what truth